You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Good afternoon. I'm Jonathan Capehart in today for Leonard Lopate. Look at health news over the last few years, and you'll see lots of headlines about the obesity epidemic, rising health care costs, and even higher numbers of obese infants and children than ever before. Dr. Robert Lustig has been treating childhood obesity for more than 20 years, and in 2012, he wrote Fat Chance about how processed foods, and sugar in particular, were driving the obesity epidemic. Now he's teamed up with Chef Cindy Gershon and Heather Millar to write the Fat Chance Cookbook. Along with healthy recipes, it also explains the science behind what he calls our industrial global diet and why it's making so many of us unhealthy. It's published by Hudson Street Press, and I'm pleased that it brings Dr. Lustig back to the Leonard Lopate Show. Welcome.
Thank you, Jonathan. I just want to say, W.C. Fields said, never follow children or dogs. I want to add to that president.
Right, the president, especially this president. So let's talk about Fat Chance Cookbook. Did that grow out of your book, Fat Chance?
Yes. Basically, people read Fat Chance and said, you know, Dr. Lustig, you made a very compelling argument for what's wrong. Now what do we do? And the bottom line is you'd have to have some method for being able to deal with the problem. Mm-hmm. Now, we need a personal intervention, if you will, and we need societal intervention. This is part of the personal intervention, this cookbook. We have one-third of America now who does not know how to cook. We have to get them cooking again in order to be able to solve this problem. This is our effort to try to do that.
Well, I'm one of those people who doesn't know how to cook. I have cooked. I don't have the time. I don't have the patience.
I understand.
And so how is this cookbook going to make someone like me cook?
Okay. The bottom line is, if you say you don't have the time and you don't have the patience, you never will. Ultimately, you have to make this a priority. Now, you happen to be a very thin guy, but that doesn't mean you're a very healthy guy. What we have learned is that being overweight and being sick are not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Let me try to put this into, you know, sort of a more global perspective. Right now, 30% of America is obese. So we have 240 million adults in America. 30% obese, that's 72 million people. And the standard mantra is that 80% of those obese people are ill. They get type 2 diabetes, they get hypertension, they get lipid problems, they get cardiovascular disease, they get cancer, they get dementia. So that's 57 million Americans basically breaking the medical healthcare bank. And Medicare will be broke by the year 2026. It's their fault. They're obese. They're sick. It's their fault. They're the problem. That's the standard mantra. Mm-hmm. This is incorrect. This is a mistake. If 80% of obese people are metabolically ill, that means that 20% of obese people are metabolically healthy. They will not cost the taxpayer a dime. They will live a completely normal life, die at a completely normal age. They're just fat. Conversely, as it turns out, when you actually do the science, 40% of the normal weight population have the exact same metabolic disturbances that the obese do. They get insulin resistance. They get type 2 diabetes. They get hypertension. They get lipid problems. They get cardiovascular disease. They get cancer. They get dementia, but they're normal weight. When you do the math on those, that turns out to be 67 million people. They actually outclass the obese sick people. And when you do the math on all that, that's 124 million adults. It's more than half of the American population. This is a public health crisis, and being thin doesn't mean you're safe. So we can put you into an MRI scanner right now and find out if you have the disease called TOFI, T-O-F-I. Thin on the outside, fat on the inside. You may be just as sick as the obese guy, even though you're nice and thin.
Well, I mean, you don't know what's going on underneath this shirt. But I was going to ask you about what you write in your book about metabolic syndrome.
Right.
And you may have gotten into that in your last answer. And if you have, I was going to ask you to, if you haven't, to explain it and how it's related to obesity.
Right. So metabolic syndrome is not obesity. Metabolic syndrome travels with obesity, but it is not obesity. They are different. And there is a disease that we take care of that explains the difference. It's a disease called lipodystrophy. Lipodystrophy, HIV patients frequently get this, but you can also have genetic abnormalities. Basically, you have too little fat. Not too much fat, too little fat. And because you don't have as many fat cells as you're supposed to, when your body makes fat, which is something your liver does routinely, you have no place to put it. And so it lodges in the liver, it lodges in the muscles, and these patients have the worst metabolic syndrome of any patient, obese or not. And they're thin, and they're sick as hell. And it shows that you can get sick from too much fat or too little fat, because it's not the fat that counts. It never was.
But when this, when these things get lodged in your liver and in your organs, I mean, are there signs that the person will see that, you know, I might be sick?
It's very hard to sometimes know the answer to that. Some people will notice a ridging of the back of the neck and under the arms. This has a name. It's called acanthosis nigricans. When I was a medical student, I never saw it. It was something buried into a textbook. Now, every patient who comes to my clinic now has this as a sign. It's this thing that people think is ring around the collar. They try to scrub it off. It doesn't come off. And what it is
it's literally around the collar of their neck.
Absolutely. On extensor surfaces of their body. Hmm. It's on their elbows. It's on the backs of their knees. It's in their groin. It's under the breast cleavage. And people try to rub it off. It doesn't rub off because it's actually a change in the skin. And it's because of insulin working on a receptor in the skin called the epidermal growth factor receptor. That is a sign of the disease process we're talking about. So that's one thing you could see. The other mm-hmm. thing that's really easy to notice is your waist circumference. So your belt size. You know, people say it's all about your weight. Garbage. When you stand on a scale, you are measuring four compartments at once. Bone, more is better. Muscle, more is better. Subcutaneous, or big butt fat, if you will, more is better. Truly, more is better. 16,000 Dutch men, one slice CT through the abdomen. When you factor out the visceral fat, the belly fat, which we'll talk about in a moment, it turned out that the more big butt fat, the more subcutaneous fat, the longer you live. And ask any little old lady, okay, what happens when she breaks her hip?
Mm-hmm.
Because she won't break her hip if she's got that sub-Q fat. So actually, sub-Q fat, more is better. The only one, the only compartment that's a problem is the visceral fat, the inside fat, this thin on the outside, fat on the inside mm-hmm. fat, more is worse. Now that's 4-6% of your total body weight. So when you stand on the scale, what are you measuring? You don't know. So what's the most likely way to be able to tell about that bad compartment? Your pant size, your waist circumference. If that's over a certain threshold, 35 inches for women, 40 inches for men, the chances that you have visceral fat are much greater. But it turns out it's actually the liver fat that matters the most.
Oh, wow. I just pull this back for a second. You write that a calorie is not a calorie. So
right.
Then what is a calorie, and are there different kinds of calories?
Okay. A calorie is a unit of measure. It's a unit of thermodynamic measure. What a calorie is how much energy it takes to take 1 gram of water and raise it, its temperature by 1 degree centigrade. That's a calorie. It is a unit of physics. If you take food and you put it in a device called a bomb calorimeter, and you explode it to release its energy, the amount of energy released tells you how many calories that food has, how much higher the temperature of the water would be if you had that much energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great if you're a bomb calorimeter. But we're not bomb calorimeters. Where the calories come from has everything to do with where they go, how they're metabolized, how much energy gets released, and whether or not they cause disease or not. If a calorie is a calorie, then it doesn't matter if you get your calories from carrots, cheesecake, or Coca-Cola. But if a calorie is not a calorie, then it matters where those calories come from. And that is exactly what we have determined. That's what science has determined, and that's what Fat Chance was about, and that, in fact, is what the cookbook is about. Because if there are certain calories that are more disease-producing than other calories, then those are the calories we should be avoiding. And guess what? Those are the calories that have been dumped into the food supply, specifically by the food industry, because they know when they do, we buy more. And that's what's got to get fixed.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, in for Leonard Lopate, and we're speaking with Dr. Robert Lustig about his new book, The Fat Chance Cookbook, published by Hudson Street Press. So since we're talking about food and the food that we eat.
We're talking about disease,
well,
too.
Disease. But we're hardwired to, like, even crave sugar. I'm one of those people.
Indeed.
I love sugar. But is sugar the problem, or is it part of the problem?
Okay. The biggest problem we have is sugar, but there are many pieces to the problem. In fact, I count 8 separate things that are wrong with our diet that are contributing to disease. Not one, but 8. I'll list them for you. 3 things too little, 5 things too much. The things that there's too little of are fiber, micronutrients like vitamins and minerals and flavonoids and polyphenols and things like that, and omega-3 fatty acids, which are anti-inflammatory. The things that there are too much of, and there are 5 of those, too much trans fats, but they're coming down, too much omega-6 fatty acids, which are pro-inflammatory, too much branched chain amino acids. These are amino acids you get from proteins, but they're dietary amino acids, and the place where you get them most is corn-fed anything, corn-fed beef, chicken, or fish.
Okay.
So which is everything.
Toast.
Alcohol. Okay. And finally, sugar. Those are the 5 things there are too much of. Now, all of those contribute to disease. But of those 8, the one that's the most actionable, because it's the one that the food industry specifically uses for its own purposes to get you to buy more, and has so become so ubiquitous that it has actually saturated the entire food supply, is sugar. Because of the 600,000 items that are available in the American grocery store today, 80% of them have added sugar, spiked with added sugar, specifically by the food industry for its own purposes, because they know when they do, you buy more. That's their job, is to get you to buy more. They've been really good at it.
So, well, when we're talking about sugar, we're not just talking about, you know, a box of, you know, white cane sugar. We're talking about sugar in
everything,
in all its forms.
You bet.
High fructose.
We're talking about high fructose corn syrup, sucrose, agave, maple syrup. You know, name your caloric sweetener. If it's sweet, it's from the molecule fructose, mm-hmm. which is half of sugar.
But, I mean, it's even in things that you wouldn't suspect being sugar. I mean, a few weeks ago, one of our producers was cooking and opened up a can of tomato paste, and later she was looking at the label, and high fructose corn syrup was one of the first ingredients.
Exactly.
So sugars, I mean, there are sugars in things where we least expect them.
Absolutely. And the food industry does that on purpose. Look, there are 5 tastes on the tongue. There's sweet, of course, then there's salty, there's bitter, there's sour, and then there's this thing called umami, which is like roast beef or soy sauce, that astringent or pungent taste. Sugar covers up the other 4. Sugar covers up the iniquities of bad food. So, tomato sauce. Why is the tomatoes in the tomato sauce in the tomato sauce and not as a tomato? And the reason is because it's immature, it's acidic. They add the sugar to cut the acid.
I'm speaking with Dr. Robert Lustig about how to cut the sugar and processed food from our diets by cooking at home more. He's been treating childhood obesity for more than 20 years. We're discussing his latest book, The Fat Chance Cookbook, written with Cindy Gershon and Heather Millar. It's published by Hudson Street Press, and we'll have more after a break.
We'll be right back.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, in for Leonard Lopate, speaking with Dr. Robert Lustig about his new book, The Fat Chance Cookbook. Okay, so one of the things that you say we should do more of, and especially people like me who don't cook, is to cook at home. But is it enough to cook at home, or do you have to be more conscious of what you're cooking?
Oh, absolutely. It's about real food. I mean, if you take a box of, you know, tortellini out of a bag, you know, and throw it into a skillet and, you know, call that home cooking, you know, try again. That's not what this is about. This is about actually using real ingredients. One of the reasons is because real ingredients means fiber. Fiber is good. Now, everybody thinks fiber is the stuff you throw in the garbage after you squeeze the oranges to make orange juice. Everybody thinks fiber is useless, non-essential. In fact, fiber is the single most important nutrient, and it's the nutrient we don't even absorb. First of all, the vitamins, the micronutrients all travel with the fiber. Number two, the fiber acts as a gel, as a barrier on the inside of your intestine, reducing the rate of absorption of the nutrients so that your liver doesn't get overwhelmed, because it's all about whether or not your liver can process the glut, the excess of the energy
like
that you're consuming. It is like a filter and a barrier. That's a good barrier. And lastly, what fiber does is because you don't absorb all of those calories up in the upper intestine, which is where you would absorb them if, say, you drank a soda, the fiber makes those calories go further down the intestine where the bacteria are waiting for them. Mm. You are 10 trillion cells. You have 100 trillion bacteria in your intestine. Each of us is really just a bag of bacteria with legs. And how many calories those bacteria get is how many calories you didn't. You want to feed your bacteria. And when you feed your bacteria, you get good bacteria instead of bad bacteria that don't make the poisons that actually help produce metabolic syndrome. Mm-hmm. So giving your bacteria their daily dose, if you will, helps you, helps them, and keeps you healthy. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Lustig, I've neglected to tell our listeners that if you have a question for Dr. Lustig about obesity, sugar, and cooking, you can give us a call at 212-433-9692. Leave a comment on our show page or find us on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So, Dr. Lustig, what did you learn about how to get people to cook and eat healthier food?
Well, it ain't easy. The bottom line is they have to know how and they have to know why. What we do in our clinic, we have a little thing that we do that we think is the most important paradigm for why our clinic is successful. It's called the teaching breakfast. So we bring in 12 new patients all at once. We get labs on them because they're fasting and, of course, they're hungry. And we sit these 12 kids down with their 12 parents at a communal table, and it's an hour-long breakfast narrated by our dietitian so that the parents and the kids know why the foods are there on that table and what it is that breakfast should really look like. And four things come out of that breakfast. Number one, the parents have to see that the kid will eat the food before they'll go buy it. Number two, the parents have to see that the parent will eat the food before they'll go buy it. Number three, the parents have to see that other kids will eat the food because they've got other kids at home and they have to know that they don't have to shop twice for everybody in the family. And number four, we have to show them the bill, that they can afford the food. When we answer all four of those questions for parents, they will actually go out and do the right thing, buy those foods, cook them at home, or provide them as breakfast, and that's when we start seeing real change in terms of our patients' metabolic health and their weight.
You know, one of the things that people have been talking about is gluten-free. Everything is gluten-free, and you hear about people who have this gluten intolerance, and they have to eat, they insist on gluten-free, whatever it is. Right. Can you talk about that? For someone like me, what is gluten,
I can
and how
tell
did
you
it
what
become
it is.
So important in people's lives?
Okay, I can tell you what it is, but I actually can't talk about it, and the reason is because the science is not in. What gluten is it's a protein that's in certain grains, New World grains primarily, and it causes an allergic reaction in some patients that causes the breakdown of the intestinal barrier. And if it does that, it's called celiac disease. And now, celiac disease is a relatively common disease. It's about 1 in 132 people. 7/8 of the people who have celiac disease don't know they have it. And it can cause anything from malabsorption to severe gas to weight loss to fatty liver to fluid in the abdomen and ultimately can even kill you if you don't take care of it. Celiac disease is a disaster, and I take care of patients with celiac disease. But there are a whole crew of people out there, adults and children, who say they are gluten intolerant. They don't have celiac disease. We do small bowel biopsies on them, and they look just fine. Mm-hmm. But they say that they get better when they go off gluten. We do not know what is wrong with these people yet. There may be some problem, but the science is not in on this phenomenon yet. I know William Davis wrote this book called Wheat Belly, and he's gotten everybody up in a furor, and everybody's got their, you know what, in a ringer over this question of gluten. But I am, as a pediatric endocrinologist who deals with this on a daily basis, I am not in a position to be able to condone this.
Mm-hmm. So Joe in Brooklyn left this question on our show page. He writes, I make a smoothie every morning made with kale, blueberries, apple, banana, ginger, and celery. Is this healthy or is it making me fat?
Well, there's some in it that's good and not others that are not. Here's the story on smoothies. There's this thing called fiber, right? Yeah, well, there are two fibers. There's a fiber called soluble fiber, which we can liken to pectins, the thing that holds jelly together. And then there's insoluble fiber, the stringy stuff in the celery, mm-hmm. if you will. It's brown or green in general. Pectins are clear. Insoluble fiber is brown or green. You need both. In order to make this gel on the inside of the intestine, to let the fiber do its job, you need both. When you put all of those things into a Vitamix or a Breville, and you're making a smoothie out of it, the soluble fiber stays because it's a single molecule. But the insoluble fiber is a polymerized set of molecules, and the shearing forces of the blades chop that insoluble fiber up into smithereens. So it destroys the insoluble fiber. It's gone. So when you consume that smoothie, you're only getting half of the fiber that you thought you were getting because you've killed the insoluble fiber and you need both. Now, the vegetables don't have very many calories. They have all this other stuff. So if you're doing the kale and the other stuff, you know, fine. But as soon as you're throwing the apples and the blueberries in, you know, because after all, that's what makes it worth drinking because that's mm-hmm. the fructose that made it worth consuming, that's a problem. So I'm not a big smoothie fan.
And you're also not a big juicing fan.
I am
either.
A very unbig juicing fan. I'm not for it at all.
Well, let's go to caller for Michelle in Westchester. She's about juicing. Michelle, are you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. What is your question for Dr. Lustig?
Yes. Well, I think he's answered the question about juicing, which I've always felt is counterintuitive. But I do have a question, Dr. Lustig. Mm-hmm. I know you've done a lot of work on the glycemic index. And in this show today, I haven't heard you mention that, and I wonder if you've abandoned that notion or you're still a believer in the glycemic value of food.
Actually, I think you're referring to my colleague in Boston, Dr. David Ludwig. I'm Lustig. He's Ludwig. Someday we're going to open a law firm together. But he's the person who has been extolling the concept of glycemic index. I'm happy to talk about it. Here's what glycemic index is for the listeners out there. Glycemic index is how high does your blood glucose rise when you consume 50 grams of a carbohydrate in a specific food. Now, that is a proxy for how high does your insulin rise when you consume that exact same food. That's really what matters is the insulin, not the glucose. So glycemic index is a proxy for insulin release, and insulin is the thing that drives weight gain. So in the idea of reducing glycemic index, that is, foods that raise your blood glucose less, you are therefore raising your insulin less. I'm for that. But there's one huge mega problem with glycemic index. It's called fructose. Fructose has a very low glycemic index. It has a glycemic index of 19. That's very low. So you would say fructose is great because it has a low glycemic index. Yeah, but fructose's effects, its negative effects, have nothing to do with glycemic index. In fact, it has to do with what your liver does with the fructose. Remember, fructose is not glucose. What fructose does is it raises your serum fructose, which actually poisons your arteries and is not reflected in how high your blood glucose goes. So fructose is exactly the reason why glycemic index is a canard.
Dr. Lustig, we have maybe about 7 minutes, and we got a lot of calls and people coming in. So let's. I want to go. Jim in New Jersey sent us a message. Is packaged oatmeal worth eating for fiber, or should I be eating another type?
Eat the steel-cut oats. That's where the fiber is. You take a look at that packaged oatmeal. I won't mention the names because it doesn't matter. But you look, and the amount of sugar in those packaged oatmeals are enormous. And they had to take the fiber out in order to make it a powder. And so there's almost no fiber, and there's boatloads of sugar. That is exactly what you don't want to eat. A little clue, a little trick. Make the steel-cut oats on your stove the night before and leave them at room temperature. And then in the morning, take them out and put them in the microwave and just heat them up. Then they'll be ready, and you didn't have to spend any time in the morning to deal with them.
Let's go to Lauren. She, I believe, has a question about good fiber. Lauren, are you there? I think we lost. Oh, here she is. Lauren.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Question for Dr. Lustig.
Yeah, thank you. My question was, you see cereal boxes that say loads of fiber, et cetera, et cetera. What sort of fiber should we be focusing on? Vegetables, oat, grain? Is there any specific one that is the best one?
Right. So if you see a processed food that says added fiber, or provides 25% of your daily recommendations of fiber, do not believe it. Do not believe it. What that is added cereal fiber, like maltodextrin and other things like that. That is like the soluble fiber. That is not the insoluble fiber. So fiber one bars and things like that, you have to be very wary. That is not the way you do it. In addition, you will see things on the label that say made with whole grain or whole grain, like whole grain Lucky Charms. Let me tell you, you may start with a whole grain, but as soon as you pulverize it to process it into the oats that are in the Lucky Charms, okay, it ain't whole grain anymore because you've pulverized it. It ain't whole. That's the whole point. So be very wary of claims on the outside of labels. The bottom line is, if it's got a health label, if it's got some sort of health claim on the outside, assume the opposite.
Let's go to Kate in Manhattan. Kate.
Hi there. I've been using like Smart Balance as like a butter substitute to get better oils, and I'm wondering if you think it is actually a healthy thing to be eating.
Well, Smart Balance has a certain number of reasonable fatty acids in it that are a little bit better than some of the other things that are out there. It's certainly way better than margarine. But we have now learned that butter, real butter, saturated fat, is not the culprit. It is not the villain that it was made out to be all those years. The American Heart Association has debunked the fat hypothesis. Saturated fat is not the villain that it was made out to be. Almost everyone in America could actually consume butter and be just fine. Now, there is a caveat to that. 1 in 500 people have a disease called familial hypercholesterolemia. They have an actual genetic defect in what's known as the LDL receptor. If you have that, then you really do need to watch your saturated fat intake, and I don't argue that. If you've got that disease, you're going to need to go low fat or you're going to die of a heart attack. But it's only 1 in 500. Virtually everyone else in the country could eat butter instead of Smart Balance and do just fine.
We only have about 3 minutes left. I'm going to bring you back to the cookbook, and really quickly talk about Cindy Gershon, your co-author. How did you first meet?
Well, she is a force of nature. She is amazing. You have never met a more positive, amazing person in your life. This is a woman, she's been a chef all her life, who 15 years ago, she weighed 100 pounds more than she does today. And she was depressed, angry, unhappy, and didn't know why. And her doctors couldn't tell her what to do to try to fix the problem. She jump-started this all by herself, went sugar-free because she thought it was the right thing to do, lost the 100 pounds, and has kept it off for 15 years.
Wow.
Now, it turns out her husband is a pediatrician. I was giving grand rounds at his hospital. He invited her along. She came to the lecture, heard what I was talking about in terms of how sugar affects the body, and she basically acted like a stalker. She didn't let me out of that room for 3 hours, and she pelted me with every scientific question you could imagine. And I gave them all to her, and then she started to cry. And she said, "You have finally validated scientifically all of the things that I have experienced over the last 15 years, and I want to thank you." That information gave her the courage to start a nonprofit in the East Bay called the Wellness City Challenge, which has now gotten the cities of Concord and Martinez to go sugar-free for the last 2 years. She has become a food instructor. Her husband now runs the restaurant business. She's become a food instructor at Mount Diablo High School to change these kids' lives around. They have now basically, their grades have gone up, their weight has gone down, they have become productive members of society because of the change in nutrition that Cindy has brought to that school. And every recipe in this cookbook was vetted by a Mount Diablo High School student to be producible and consumable by a high school kid within a school period. So if you don't know how to cook, or if your kid doesn't know how to cook, this is the place to start, because if Mount Diablo High School students can do it, I promise you can do it too.
And real fast, someone asked if the recipes in the cookbook could be modified for vegetarians.
Absolutely. Of course. Virtually everything could exclude the meat. And if you want to be vegetarian and do it with tofu, actually, many of the recipes actually have that in there as variations already in the cookbook.
That's terrific. I've been speaking with Dr. Robert Lustig about how to cut the sugar and processed food from our diets by cooking at home more. I mean, good luck to me with that, but still, I hear you. He's been treating childhood obesity for more than 20 years. We were discussing his latest book, The Fat Chance Cookbook, written with Cindy Gershon and Heather Millar. It's published by Hudson Street Press. Dr. Lustig, thanks very much for joining us
today. Thank you so much for having me, Jonathan.